ZEW Wirklich Wirtschaft Background. Ein Podcast des Leibniz-Zentrums für europäische Wirtschaftsforschung in Mannheim.
Nicht jeder Markt regelt sich von selbst. Das kennen wir von Strommärkten oder den Auktionen zu Mobilfunkfrequenzen. Komplexe Märkte zu gestalten und durch ein optimales Design schnell effiziente Lösungen zu finden, gehört zu den Hauptanliegen von Marktdesign. Wie wichtig hier eine systematische Herangehensweise ist und wie die Theorie sich am besten in die Praxis umsetzen lässt, darüber spreche ich in dieser Folge mit niemand Geringerem als einem Nobelpreisträger. Herzlich willkommen bei Wirklich Wirtschaft, dem Podcast des Leibniz-Zentrums für europäische Wirtschaftsforschung in Mannheim. Mein Name ist Katrin Müller und mein Gesprächspartner hier im Studio ist heute Professor Paul Milgram von der Stanford University. Unser Gespräch führen wir auf Englisch.
Hello, Professor Milgram, and welcome. I'm really delighted that you could join us in our brand new podcast studio. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us about market design and its challenges and about your research, of course. As you know, market design is one of the research fields here at ZEW, and to be honest, sometimes it gets really hard for us as communicators to explain to journalists or the general public what market design stands for. So let's start right away with a basic question. What fascinates you about market design and how would you define it?
Well, the market design emerged intellectually in the 1990s, partly because more and more markets were being run online as web browsers came into being. And we came to understand that the detailed rules of the market could have a pretty big impact on how they performed. I got involved in 1993, right at the very beginning, with the design of radio spectrum auctions. And that inspired my interest. And I've had some wonderful fun since then with designing even more complicated markets.
You are now one of the leading scientists in this field and you received the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences in 2020. What has changed for you since then, except that we know now, thanks to your co-author and friend Robert Wilson, that you have a doorbell camera?
Yes, well, I do have a door camera. It certainly has impacted the way people see me. The Nobel Prize is very famous. I remember my grandson came back from school a day after and said, "Even my teacher knows what that prize is." He was so impressed. It's a very famous prize, and people take me seriously. I don't have to prove things to people anymore. When I have ideas, people are more willing to listen. So those are nice things. Those are a pretty big impact, actually.
That sounds good. One of your great contributions in this field has been to bridge the gap between theoretical auction models and real-world implementation. Which insight from theory turned out to be crucial for the actual implementation of auctions? And why is the historical approach so important for you in that context?
Okay, well, those are two questions, right? As an economist who came to this as a theorist studying market design and contracts and other things, incentives were always important to me. And I think it was a surprise to some people the amount of attention we paid to the incentives that were created by market rules. And in fact, in the work I'm doing right now, it still surprises people sometimes how much attention I pay to incentives. In the case that I talked about yesterday, and I'll talk about again today, actually, I was talking about the history of the markets because market design, what people do at any time is responsive to what's going on in the market. Often we're solving a problem that has existed, and as the technology changes and as one problem is solved, another problem emerges as the main one to be solved. And so we see a sequence of innovations often, and they're linked by history. You want something that will be easy for people. You want solutions that will be easy for people to adopt so that they don't resist your solutions and so that these things are implemented successfully. So the history matters for that reason.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk more generally. Auctions and markets allocate scarce resources, and this has distributional consequences. At ZEW, we work, for example, on auction markets for energy or mobile frequencies, as well as on matching markets for daycare places or the distribution of free food. How does effective market design reconcile efficiency and fairness?
Yes. Yeah. So some of my students have been very active in that area. Piotr Dvorak, Mohammed Akbarpour, and others. And it comes up also in markets that involve money, as you've described, but also in free markets, in kidney exchange and so on. And new methods are being developed to do that, to take those things into account. I guess I can talk about one example. Mohammed was involved in the change in kidney transactions in Iran. Iran's the only country in the world where you can actually pay someone to donate a kidney. And what Mohammed had noticed is that the people who accepted payments were usually poor people who were willing for money to give up a kidney, an extra kidney. And he thought that competition among them resulted in low prices, and that if you cared about equity and redistribution, you might want higher prices for kidneys. And he convinced the Iranian government to substantially increase the price. And it didn't have much effect on the demand side, but on the supply side, it created more income for people, but also created a need for rationing, because when you increase the price, the supply goes up. So there's some fancy market design that's involved in doing that. But it's an example of taking into account redistribution.
So on your opinion, should market designers explicitly build in social objectives beyond pure economic efficiency?
So when I'm working on market designs, usually what the objectives are specified by the people who are hiring me. When I did the U.S. incentive auction, broadcast incentive auction, for example, you know, they had a time frame within which they wanted things done. They had a certain public image that they wanted to create. They had simplicity objectives that they stated. And then, you know, politically, it was really very interesting. The Democrats in the United States, though, which is our, you know, more left party, was interested in clearing a lot of radio spectrum for use in wireless data. And the Republicans, our more right-wing party, was interested in the amount of revenue it would raise to help lower the public deficit. And so, you know, and I was hired by the government, and I had to take as given what the objectives would be. But they can be quite complicated, the objectives. They're not always just as simple as efficiency.
Let's move on from the man-made markets to the digital-driven world. Given the growing importance of AI in science, but also in the daily use, how can AI influence market design and what are the consequences?
You might have asked the reverse question, too. How can market design help AI? That's one of the problems I'm working on right now, actually.
Next question.
Oh, your next question? Okay, well, let's take them in order then. How can AI help market design? Well, I've noticed that there are proposals to let AI assist bidders. I have some skepticism toward that. I tend to prefer simplicity. We used machine learning in the incentive auction as part of the development of the algorithms that were used by the auction. We had an objective of making things simple for the bidders, but putting all the complexity under the hood. You don't need to know how your car works to know when you step on the accelerator what it does. And we had that view toward the reallocation and the moving around of radio spectrum, and machine learning techniques were certainly a big part of doing that.
So from the other hand, what can market design do for AI?
Right now, my company, Auctionomics, has partnered with a security exchange called One Kronos, and we are working on developing markets, financial markets for compute. It's very, very expensive to build data centers, and the Raising money to do that involves hedging the risks that are involved, and currently there's no way to hedge risks. It's difficult to borrow from a bank to invest in processors and in GPUs when nobody is quite sure what they're going to be worth a year from now, because we don't know what the next generation will be doing. But if you could hedge that risk, that would open up more financing and a more rapid build out of the data centers we're going to need to take advantage of AI. So that's one of the projects I'm working on mm-hmm. right now.
That sounds interesting. So I guess the historical point of view doesn't matter there, because we don't have much history with AI. But how do you do this?
Well, yes and no, right? The when you develop financial markets, you want them to work together with the existing markets, to be familiar to the people who are investors in markets, so that it doesn't look strange. So you take a look at other markets that have benchmarks, S&P 500 markets, or where benchmarks are used, and use that as a model to make the markets that we create look familiar, so that people can use them easily.
So from the global markets to the German market, let me ask a question closely tied to the German context. What role can research institutions like CDW play in linking theoretical work with policymaking and practice? For instance, auction design and evaluation, data analytics, advisory work, particularly in the European context. Do you think that the European context and its regulation are more challenging than in other regions?
There are places, there are times here when I think that lawyers run too much stuff and don't understand the technical challenges involved. There are times, of course, when the technicians get too focused on it. I mean, there's some balance to be reached, and I think the balance is different in the U.S. and in the European context. There, with respect to many things, scholars who are doing good work have things to teach to regulators and to policymakers, and one hopes that that they do a good job and that they're good at communicating. I think institutes like this emphasize the interface and allow research to be put into practical form where it might actually be used. So you mentioned electricity markets, or you mentioned organization of childcare. Those are nice applications of ideas that are relatively modern, that didn't exist, 20 years ago. So I think the value of that is clear. And the value going forward will depend on what research gets done going forward and on our ability to communicate it to people who want to use it.
Before we close, one of our main tasks as a research institute is the development of young talents. Which open research questions would you recommend for young researchers in market design to explore? Are there some hidden gems that you can suggest?
So, one of the things I'm proudest of in my own career is my development of young researchers. I have students who have done extremely well especially in the last decade, getting good jobs and developing new ideas. And the best of the young researchers are mostly coming up with their own questions. They're not questions that I hand them. I understand that's different from the way some people develop researchers. But the too much talent is wasted working on old problems that somebody tells you are important. They are problems that, if they were that important, that person would have solved them themselves if they could. They're either too hard or really second-tier problems. The best young researchers that I work with are identifying and finding their own problems, and I keep challenging them when they come back with stuff that's not important. Say, do you think that's important enough? Is that still something you really want to work on? And send them back to find, because there's certainly plenty of problems in the world that need fixing, from the climate to aging populations to immigration, you name it. There are lots of problems that need fixing. And a good young scholar ought to be able to find something where he or she can do some research and make it work better and do something valuable.
So thank you again for your time, Professor Milgram. It's been a privilege to have you here. I hope our listeners will be inspired to dive deeper into the market design spheres. Thank you for your insights. It has been really, really inspiring.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.